interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now
let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, October 8 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back where we want to be. Live at Pete's on Johnston on 1037 The Game. Ben Love at Pete's. And we'll have a huge three-hour show to unfold today. With us, in spirit, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, the famous Clint D. Let's launch right in to the continuation of LSU Florida Hate Week. I tried to get you started on that front yesterday. A lot more takers on Facebook than over the phone. I guess that kind of mimics real life. A lot of people get amped up behind not only anonymous Twitter handles, but even behind their own names and that kind of shield on Facebook. But people love bubbling over on social media. Didn't get quite as much of it over the air. I asked for your most hated Florida football figure. And I'll tell you later in the show why another one maybe has kind of etched his name in stone. Somebody that should be considered this year's most hated Florida football player. But this thing's starting to go both ways, and it's adding into what should be an incredibly chippy, aggressive atmosphere Saturday night in Death Valley. And I don't think it's going to be limited just between the lines. I think this one has pregame skirmish written all over it. I think this one could be one of those games where LSU faithful. And look, I grew up in Baton Rouge in the 90s. It wasn't always as genteel as it is in the parking lot these days, pre-games for tailgating. It wasn't always kind of this way. And people listening that have been out there since back in the gap in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know of what I speak. I don't think it's going to be pull random Gator fans into the tailgate, offer them boudin, cracklins, gumbo, and a free beer. I don't think it's going to quite be that type of atmosphere Saturday, rolling into Saturday night. I think this one is going to be at a fever pitch very, very early on. And if you need just a little more to get you amped up on a Tuesday, and here I go. I'm going to get you going a little bit faster than maybe you wanted to. Heart racing a little more than maybe you wanted to some 4 days out before the game. But you need to hear this if you haven't yet. And all the credit goes to our brother across the basin. But he is from this side of the basin. Jock Doucette. WAFB-TV in Baton Rouge. I want you to hear this entire compilation. It's only about a minute 20 seconds long. First, you're going to hear the voice of Joe Burrow. Then you're going to hear linebacker Kalavon Chaisson. And then defensive lineman Braden Fajoco. Here is what a transfer from Ohio State, a kid from Texas, and a kid with Braden Fajoco's background, here is what they have to say about LSU Florida this time around.
I don't like them very much. I know they don't like us very much, and that's kind of been the talk around here, but you just kind of have to keep your emotions in check in a game like this.
You don't. It's not even going to sugarcoat it. It's just something that, you know what I'm saying, just goes wrong with the history of the programs. Obviously, two great teams that it's just bad blood colliding, very passionate programs, and it's going to be something that's going to be exposed Saturday night.
Not at all. Even if Florida's playing a Big Ten school or something, I don't care much for it. Like after last year's game, I forgot that quarterback's name, their starting quarterback or whatever, I don't know his name, but I mean, he was running around celebrating on the field like he won the Super Bowl, and so I don't know if he's playing this week. Hopefully he does, but I mean, I'm looking forward to getting after him.
That just slays me for Braden Fajoco at the end. Whoever the quarterback was, okay, it was Felipe Franks. He was committed to LSU for a while before Braden was, you know, when he was over at Texas Tech. And no, he's not playing this week. So film study has not necessarily taught Braden that, but I get it. Those guys see numbers. They don't, usually care about names and height, weight, whatever. But that's amazing. Felipe Franks out there running around like they won the Super Bowl. I love every bit of the honesty from Burrow, Chaisson, Fajoco. And I'm glad that nobody's sugarcoating this. You don't have to like each other, especially at the collegiate level. Now, you get to the pro level, you start getting paid the big bucks. Some of that goes out the door. There aren't as many rivalries. We've grown conditioned to that. We accept that. For example, Saints-Falcons, that's more about the fans. That's more about the media and the people that live in New Orleans and the ATL. At the root of this, LSU players and Florida players genuinely dislike each other, and I am here for it, and I know that you are as well. There is something important that Burrow said in there. Aside from some of the mudslinging, some of the honesty, one of those we're getting a lot of here coming up toward election season, the other not as much, but still, we got a lot of both, honesty and mudslinging. And Burrow said you got to keep your emotions intact, despite everything, right? Despite all the window dressing of the rivalry, two straight games in the swamp, the last time it was played in Baton Rouge, Darius Geis running the wrong way, and LSU coughing up a game that had dominated between the 20s, despite every bit of it. Can you keep your emotions intact? I agree with Burrow. That is what you got to do, but can you do it? And Ruffin Rodriguez is famous for coming on this program and saying some semblance of the following. LSU Bama, especially last year in Baton Rouge, Coach O had the team too fired up too quickly. What was it? I think a Navy SEAL the night before? I mean, Friday night before a 7 o'clock kickoff in Baton Rouge? Going through the Tiger Walk and, I mean, it's not just Fajoco and all the D linemen doing that whatever Hawaiian walk it is. Shame on me. I should know the name of it by this point. But it's not just them. Heck, it is Ogeron out there giving people running start, leaping chest bumps, right? And just wanting to throw it down at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And so I wonder if LSU heading into this game can keep its emotions in check, as Burrow said. Now, it's a good start toward that end that Joe Burbank is thinking that way and that he feels that way. Why? Because the rest of those cats like to follow him. And that is what separates him from any quarterback LSU's had in at least the last 12 years. I don't know that Burrow really has all that much more talent than Zach Mettenberger. In terms of arm strength, he definitely doesn't. Sure, he runs it better, but I think between the years, Burrow might just be as complete as LSU's had in a long, long time. So can LSU keep its emotions? I'll tell you, I think they can if they follow Joe's lead. But hate is starting to bubble over, and it's only Tuesday. I love it. And later in the show, I'm going to get more of your take on this exact subject. But I had to get you fired up to start the program today. We'll keep the good news coming. On the other side of this break, Shea Dixon. I know. Tuesdays, 5 o'clock, it's Shea's thing. His schedule's changed a little bit. When you can get one of the best weekly guests in the state, if not the Southeast, hey, you bend to what that guy needs. So Shea Dixon flips the script with us within the next 3 to 4 minutes. At straight up 5 o'clock, a straight up baller, Jake DeLome, recently inducted into the Carolina Panthers Hall of Honor. We'll talk about the biggest Raging Cajuns home game in many years with Jake DeLome at 5 o'clock. And it's an all Jake thing. In the 5 o'clock hour, Jake Madison hops aboard to talk about the Pels 133-109 win in the preseason at Atlanta last night. And finally, from 6 to 7, time for another Prep Power Hour. Matt Desimo and the Ascension Episcopal Blue Gators take center stage. We got a big show on a Tuesday, so don't you go anywhere. We're going to take a timeout, and we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we
Flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shea Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know,
right back into Pete's on Johnston. Nothing but love for that. But a whole lot of hate when it comes to LSU Florida. And yeah, we're excited about it. Let's bring Shea aboard. Shea, are you starting to feel the Tigers-Gators hate from your perch in Baton Rouge?
Oh my goodness, it's Florida Hate Week. I was on radio earlier today with Marlon Favorite, obviously one of the better D linemen from Louisiana back in the 03-04 heydays of high school football and into LSU, and I told him, I said, man, all the players we talked to yesterday, Coach O said that I'm going to talk to them, don't get on Twitter and do the trash talk. Well, I guess he forgot to say don't do it in person, because every one of them said, I'm not trash talking, I just hate Florida. And if you ask them, they hate us too. And Marlon Favorite said, they're absolutely right. Growing up, I hated Florida, they hated us. We'll play them once a year and see who's better. So, boy, you throw in the past. The kids who have been on this team a while, right, Ben, went through the Darius Geis goal line stuff and the move in the game to Tiger Stadium and back-to-back games in Gainesville and losing on a pick six. Obviously, they were trailing by a point at the end, but how last year ended, and you throw in there how well they played this season, meaning that they've got some confidence, and they're confident. I wouldn't say they're cocky, but they're confident, and they are saying very boldly and very straightforward to your face, I hate Florida, and on Saturday, I'm taking it out on them.
I think it's incredible. And quickly, I'll tell you this, Shea. We played the clip that Jacques Doucet has aired out on Twitter, and I love the fact that two of the three combatants from LSU side, Burrow, Fajoco, look, these guys are transfers from another part of the country, but they've been indoctrinated, and it is coursing through their veins. So, yeah, I think the hatred is pretty strong with just about everyone. All right, we are going to flip the script. I'm going to give you control. What you got for me today?
Well, I'm going to do this. We're going to twist this, and I'm not going to let you pick a George angle, but you're an Athens grad. You grew up in Baton Rouge, Catholic High boys. So you've got this the two times a year Florida hate. So I'm going straight to the love doctor here. Give me your best, most memorable, whatever it is, Florida week moment involving LSU. And you can spice in some Georgia in there if you'd like from your college years. But give the people on the bayou your taste. When you think of this week, what do you immediately think of?
Look, this program is number one on my poop list by a long, long way. You got to go for a while to get to Auburn, Alabama, and some of the others. And I'll tell you from a Georgia side, that game is played two and a half hours away from Gainesville and Jacksonville. It's played about 6 hours away from Athens. I went to Jacksonville once to stay for that game, and it'll never, ever happen again. The OGs that follow UGA go stay in St. Simon's Island and then flank in to Jacksonville from the north, day of the game, and then go back to St. Simon's Island. So I've got some pretty memorable but not for air stories about the Tebow era when Mark Richt and Georgia finally started to beat Florida a little bit in that game. But as far as this week for LSU, I remember being there in the 90s when LSU got beat 58-3 after going up 3-0. I remember watching it on TV from home when LSU won 28-21 in 1997. I remember watching it with my dad while living in Houston, the Tebow game in 2007. I was there in 03 in between when LSU lost to Chris Leak and company in the rain and came back to win the national championship still that year. And I've covered a whole lot of these games, home and away. I still feel like the most memorable that I've seen in person was the 2010 game. And LSU didn't go on to be a national championship team that year, but that game, and I told this story on the show yesterday, that game in the Swamp was just something. I mean, Jarrett Lee to Terrence Tolliver in the end zone to win it late. The fake field goal over the head to Colby Delahousse. Shout out to Acadiana High. It just was so much about that game that felt like shoving it right in Urban Meyer's smug face. And so when you tack that on top of the Hurricanes moving games around, the fake Mike the Tiger skeleton that's made its way back out this week, there's nothing about this week that's pretty, and I'm glad the players aren't trying to pretty it up for the camera.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on a handful of those. I remember the Tebow. Remember they all called his cell phone all week, and he scored and did the call me, and then obviously it ended in him crying and leaving the field. I think that was the same game, if I'm not mistaken. But, boy, they've got some bad blood here. Okay, so it's Florida Hate Week, right? So we'll continue the trend here. But I'll ask you this. I'm seeing Vegas out here saying that this is a 13-14-point game, which leads me to believe that they don't think any differently of Florida than they did a week ago before they beat Auburn. So where do you stand on that? And, obviously, you know the result of last week's game, but do you have any different opinion? Like, did you leave last week and say, oh, damn, Florida's better than I thought they were?
Auburn's worse than I thought they were, but I still had to give respect to Florida. I reacquired the knowledge last week that you don't really bet against Florida in the swamp. Not saying they're infallible there, but you just got to have some respect for when they play in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. I think it's a really good line that Vegas has set, and yet I'm kind of hard-pressed to want to go on LSU's side of two touchdowns. I know LSU's at home. I know this offense is as good as we've seen in a long, long time, if not ever, for the Tigers. I get the fact that Kyle Trask is playing on a sprained MCL. There are just some things I have to see. Florida's defensive line looked like the most dominant unit in that game in Gainesville last week. LSU's O-line, they finally have the five they want, Shea. You know what I'm talking about? They get Ed Ingram back at left guard. Sadiq Charles is going to play at left tackle. They've got the right five, but they haven't played together yet this year. So there are some questions that this game will answer. It's hard for me to want to throw money on LSU at 14. That being said, I totally get why Vegas is daring people to do so. LSU's offense and Burrow have given Vegas the latitude to do something like this. It's a really, really good line that's been set. But my early lean would be toward LSU winning, but not by 14.
Do you find that, because I always think two teams seem to just have this, like, for instance, the last 20 years I saw it's 10-10 split with LSU Florida. I feel like Auburn's the same way. Do you view this Florida game, what's a bigger rivalry? Because the fan bases hate both teams, I guess. They hate Florida more, so don't mean it in that way. But which one do you say is a tougher out for LSU each year? Is it Auburn or is it Florida, kind of regardless of the teams?
I think it's Florida, and I also think it could be seasonal, right? You know, Auburn, LSU, for my money in the aught decade, was the most physical game on the NCAA calendar. I'm serious. Every single year, LSU-Auburn was a bloodbath. Now, I do recognize that LSU-Florida, as Tebow kind of matriculated through, LSU-Florida in the late 90s, I mean, some spectacular moments. It kind of depends. I mean, what's the era? You know, who are the coaches? Who are the players? I guess if you were kind of putting the water gun to my head here, I would say that Florida's a bigger game than Auburn is. And I know that one is inside of the division and could be two birds with one stone, but LSU-Florida always takes on a really interesting, air about it. And it's one of the ultimate litmus test games, if you know what I'm saying. How do you stack up against another perennial power from the other side of the divide? And lately, they have mirrored each other as well. I mean, stumbling offenses that like to run the football, physical lights-out defense that pride themselves on trying to be DBU one side, the other as well. And so I'll answer LSU-Florida, but I'll admit that it's close and that it could be a bit era-specific.
The weather is amazing. I saw this weekend's about to be in the 70s. And I know that the immediate answer would be Bama last year at home. The crowd was hyped, but where is this stacking up? It's sold out. It's at 7:00. Game day is there. I mean, where does this stack up in the grand scheme of the past really 10 years of LSU? Because what was it? Fournette's, junior year, sophomore year, where they were undefeated going into Bama, and it seemed like, okay, they're playing for all the marbles right now. I get the sense we're headed there with this game. So this is going to be the best atmosphere stakes in Tiger Stadium since when?
Wow, that's really good. We went through a period of time in the earlier part of this decade where LSU, South Carolina, when Jadeveon Clowney came to town, was pretty special. Some good reminders that LSU Ole Miss in, I believe, 2014.
That's a great one.
Yeah, it was really special at night as well. It's hard to go past any of the LSU-Bama games, and so I won't, because 2012, 2014, I mean, we're all just absolutely freaking fantastic. I thought LSU-Georgia, in terms of day game receptivity, was amazing last year as well. So I would throw all of those against the wall, but you included an LSU-Bama away game. Yeah, I mean, that one probably was the last time that the program really felt like it had a chance to get toward a national championship, really and truly. And it led ultimately, after that, went south to the firing of Les Miles. So I would say this has the most on the line for this game since LSU-Bama 15. But here's the thing, Shea. LSU can lose this Saturday, or they can lose against Auburn and the game in Tuscaloosa, November 9, is still bigger than any of them. Because if you can win that one, all of this will be forgiven.
All right. Well, we're coming up against the end here, so I'll hit you with this one. What is Ben Love? What is the one key you circle? And don't say scoring more points. If LSU does this, they're going to beat Florida on Saturday night.
Pass protect. It's really that simple. And Burrow can affect part of that by getting the ball out of his hands. The receivers can affect that by getting open in coverage. LSU this year, their offensive bread is buttered through the air. You have to be able to pass protect. That D-line and the front seven gave Bo Nix fits all day long in Gainesville. So with a talented but not necessarily gelled together offensive line, it's absolutely about pass protection to me. Because if LSU protects Burrow, the ball comes out early, the Tigers are going to score more points than the Gators can keep up with. That's how I feel.
I'm with you there. All week I thought about saying tackling. You've convinced me differently because I think Florida's like that big play explosive, that's what they need type of offense. It's been what LSU's been for a while now. But I'm with you, Ben. If O-line protects, they're not going to outscore LSU. So I've got the Tigers in this one. My prediction's out there.
There it is. We got to put this baby to bed. Shea, thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back in with your sink or swim question of the day. We're hanging out live at Pete's on Johnston. And after we take a timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Boy, is the sweet voice guy there correct. And timely, because I got a sink or swim question. I'll ask it momentarily. First, an update on Astros baseball and LSU football. We'll start with the Stros. They take on the Rays, Tropicana Field tonight, 6:07 p.m. Your first pitch. You can hear every bit of the action on our sister station, KVOL The Rewind. That's 97.7 FM, 1330 AM. Stros at the Rays. And how about this? The Rays manager said within the last hour and a half, all hands are on deck except for one on the mound. Quite literally. All pitchers but Charlie Morton are available for this game tonight. And so after Diego Castillo, who's pitched all of 68 and two-thirds innings this year, so he is performing as an opener for the Rays tonight. After Castillo, the Stros could well see Tyler Glasnow or Blake Snell, reigning Cy Young Award winner, who pitched earlier in this series. And so it's Justin Verlander basically against the entire pitching staff of the Rays, except for the guy who started yesterday in Charlie Morton. That's going to be very interesting. Stros looking to get to the ALCS, where the Yankees, well, they've already reserved a spot. Yanks swept the Twinkies last night with a 5-1 win. First game of the ALCS, whether Thursday's Game 5 of the ALDS is needed or not, will be this Saturday. So Saturday and Sunday, if the Stros can win one of the next two, they will be playing host to the New York Yankees. And then it starts to get really, really fun. Hey, from fun news on the Astros to good news on LSU football. According to Brody Miller, moments ago, out at the Ponderosa, Michael Divinity, Glenn Logan, Rashard Lawrence, all practicing in pads today. Brody continued with this tweet, and I'm going to second this. That is a promising sign for three defensive starters for the Tigers leading into LSU Florida this Saturday night. So we got some good tidbits for you there as we enter back into Pete's on Johnston. Hey, it's right after 4:30, and it's a weekday. That means we've got a sink or swim question. Today it's more of a ranking assignment, but I think you'll dig it. Right after the music, I'll spill the beans.
Love, exciting and new.
Rank the SEC's top three quarterbacks. You know what you've seen so far this season. Five, for some teams, six games in. Rank the top three SEC quarterbacks. Clint, I want you to start us off, and then we'll take calls. 706-01 1-1. I'm curious where everybody's going to put Burrow. CD, let's do it this way. Give me your three in order. 1, 2, 3, and then tell me why.
All right, number one is going to be without a doubt Joe Burrow. Number two, Tua Tagovailoa. Number three, I got to go with the freshman, Bo Nix. And I'm going to go one by one with each of them. Joe Burrow, what I've seen from him has been absolutely outstanding, and I think it's just a, really shows and give a lot of credit to the man, Joe Brady, for helping get this offense to perform the way we maybe expected it to just a few short months ago. Everybody was expecting that offense to play at a certain level, and now we're seeing it perform probably a little bit above our expectations. So Joe Burrow at number one. Tua, he's doing Tua Tagovailoa things. It's not necessarily like surprising to me. He's number two on that list, but it's not too far behind Joe Burrow. And my final one, Bo Nix. I feel like a lot of it has to do with the fact he played extremely well in that season over against Oregon to rally them back in that one and keeping it competitive in a lot of these ball games. Last week may have been his worst performance, but he still deserves to be in my top three.
I got to be honest. I think the Nix pick in the top three is an abomination, and I'm going to disrespect it openly on the air. Yes, he had led Auburn to an impressive last-ditch drive to beat Oregon in Jerry World. But boy, did he get exposed in that ball game on Saturday. And it's okay to take an L and still be in this list because, after all, if you had to be undefeated to be in the list, then we'd all go Burrow to Jake Fromm, and then we might start to consider Florida's combination of Trask and Franks, which I don't think either deserves to be on the list either. I'm going to go slightly different. I'm still going to go Tua at number one. It's razor thin. I'll take Burrow at two. And at three, I think you can give me Kelly Bryant. And he's going to edge out Jake Fromm, who would be fourth for me. Here's the reason why. Out of all the guys on this list, it's possible I might actually take Jake Fromm as the pro player I'd like the most. That's no disrespect to Tua nor to Burrow. I think Jake Fromm is going to make one phenomenal NFL quarterback. I continue to hear from Athens that the work he does pre-snap, it does remind a lot of people of what you see from the Peyton Mannings, the Aaron Rodgers of the world, the guys that dissect the game mentally before taking the snap at the line of scrimmage or in the shotgun. But right now, George is hiding him a little bit. From 8 touchdowns to no interceptions. So efficient, but not winning games for Georgia. And he's currently 6th on the list of passing yards for SEC quarterbacks. So I think Jake Fromm is really good. I think he's going to be really, really good at the next level. But I don't think I could put him in my top three. Tua hasn't thrown an interception. People, 23 touchdowns to no picks. And Burrow, again, he's not far behind the pace. 22 touchdowns to only 3 picks. Here's what I would tell you. Burrow means more to his team than Tua does to his. Right? I think that's a fair statement. And so if you wanted to go MVP style, you might take Burrow, and I might agree with you. But if you're asking me to rank these guys right now, I mean, Tua's been virtually flawless so far. I'm going to go Tua ahead of Burrow by a nose. And, yes, give me Kelly Bryant, 11 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. They're 4-1. Yes, they lost the season opener at Wyoming, but since then they've beaten West Virginia. They beat South Carolina. They're not doing any of these things without Kelly Bryant. So I'm going to tell you that the Clemson transfer for me is number three, edging out from, and then from there it gets a little bit hairy. Hey, that's my take at least. Let's get more of yours. We're going to head out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, rank it for me, buddy.
I will go MVP style. I'm going to go Joe Burrow, Tua, and then Jake Fromm. Because I think Joe Burrow means the most to his team than any one of these other quarterbacks.
I completely agree, and I'll expound a little bit on that. You know, it's good to hear from you, T. Thanks for the call.
Hey, Ben, I got one question.
Hit me.
Why in the world did ESPN pick Zion Williamson to be the guest pick on game day? I'll hang up and listen, man. Love your show. Keep it up.
That is a good question. I know Ryan Clark tried to pimp himself out for it. Respect to the wanker from the West Bank, Ryan Clark. I know that Shaq was tossed around. I know that a lot of people, it was kind of a popular Twitter and Facebook thing in case you missed it. I know a lot of music-inclined listeners pushed for Garth Brooks. I saw somewhere where even there was a push made for Britney Spears. And so, yeah, people wanted to go in a lot of different directions. But Zion is the new thing on the Bayou. And I think with basketball season coming up and the number of Pels games that will be on primetime television, maybe this is an opportunity to pimp their own product. I'm just going to think out loud, and maybe that's the biggest reason why. But T's given us Burrow ahead of Tua. I don't disagree with anybody who's got him that way right now. Again, I think Tua's got a little bit more to work with in a system where he's been there for, he was. I know that Burrow was there last year, but Tua was elite in his setting last year. Not a lot changed. LSU's got new blood infused to the coaching staff with Joe Brady, and they're playing in a completely different system from last year. It's obvious. So I don't disrespect the pick of Burrow at all. CD, you gotta defend yourself, though, for Bo Nix. One more time. How is he in your top three?
To me, Ben, I, a lot of it has to do with the fact you just look at what he was able to do through those games. Of course, in the Florida game, he got exposed. I mean, what do you expect? The guy is a freshman, but the guy looked like he was virtually untouchable for the first chunk of the season. Florida was the first roadblock. I think we can wind up saying at the end of the year, he could probably be an SEC Freshman of the Year when it's all said and done. I'm surprised he was what he was, because I thought with a freshman starting quarterback, it wouldn't have panned out well. But he surprised me beyond belief, and I think he can wind up bouncing back from that very difficult performance against Florida. Mind you, Florida's got a vaunted defense. I think he can show himself a lot better going forward. Mind you, that Alabama game, it might not end well for him.
And there's no question that the kid can bounce back. And I mean, just this time last week on the program, in fact, it was last Thursday, so less than a week, Gordy Rush said the way that Nix is playing, you got to consider Auburn one of the preseason favorites for 2020. Well, there's still a lot of season to play in 2019. Auburn definitely has a chance to bounce back. Nix is going to be a good quarterback, but I think some things certainly got exposed. All right, quickly, I'll get to some of our Facebook submissions, then we got to take our final timeout in the 4 o'clock hour. Mike T., ranking his top three SEC QBs. He's going Burrow, Tua, Kelly Bryant. So he flip-flopped the top two. Otherwise, he and I, same thing. Chris W., Burrow, Tua, Fromm. That's the same as we got from T. I respect the list. Wesley, Tua, Burrow, Brennan. Miles Brennan making an appearance in an LSU fan's top three. Imagine that. All right, we are quickly going to hit the reset button. Do not forget, we're full of Jakes in the 5 o'clock hour. Jake DeLome at 5 o'clock to talk Cajuns. And Jake Madison, 1 hour from right now at 5:45 to talk all things New Orleans Pelicans basketball. We're going to take a quick timeout, but we'll be back to Pete's on Johnston with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is
one of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Back to our Tuesday hangout in the fall. Yeah, it's Pete's on Johnston. And you got more B2BS. Happy to take more of your phone calls. Top three quarterbacks in the SEC where Joe Burrow fits in for you. Let us know. 706-0111. And speaking of LSU football, as we've been telling you, Florida coming back to Death Valley, first time in 3 years. And at Acadiana Sports Station, we want to send you there. We've got a huge Show Us Your Game contest. It's really simple and free to enter. Just go to 1037thegame.com, upload a photo of yourself and your favorite LSU gear for a chance to win a pair of tickets to this intense rivalry matchup. So what are you waiting for? As soon as you pull over, if you're driving, show us your game, and we'll send you to the big game. All right, CD, we've given some of the answers so far on Facebook. We'll take some more as they come. But I did want to get to another subject. You may know that we are, let's see here, I'll do the math in my head. We are 26 hours, 9 minutes, and 54 seconds from the Cajuns hosting the biggest game at Cajun Field Boy, I don't know. Maybe since the end of the last decade, the beginning of this decade, somewhere, I suspect in the Mark Cutsmith era. It's been a long, long time since the stakes have been as high as Cajuns App State tomorrow night. And I've been getting more and more response, not necessarily about the amount of people that will be there. We touched on that yesterday. We've been doing the attendance thing and beating that dead horse, but I'll let that kind of die for right now. I'm getting more and more response about when people are going to be out there, and I find that extremely interesting. So what do you think, CD? What should a good policy be? Ruffin Rodriguez suggested on this show yesterday that the mayor ought to just let everybody off of work. I'm not sure the mayor's got that kind of pull, especially in the private sector, but what is an appropriate time to shade out of work tomorrow for all of our listeners?
I'd probably say around, let's say, 3:30, 4 o'clock. I think that'd be the perfect time to shade out because, of course, you'll be able to start parking there around 2 o'clock. I'd say around 3:30, 4 o'clock is that perfect time to kind of get out of work, get ready to kind of get your tailgate on, and start off your Wednesday right.
It's going to be hot as the Dickens. Not maybe based off what we're used to, but still, relatively speaking, pretty hot in that 3:30 to like 5 o'clock range tomorrow. The high expected to be 87 degrees. The low is 68 degrees. So that that John Denver is full of bleep, especially if he was talking about the cold front we were supposed to get in Lafayette. And by the by, CD, while we're talking about this Cajuns game and this supposed cold front that was going to come through, I feel like I'm that guy that's faking the funk right now. And we have talked about this on the program before. I am here in a long sleeve shirt that is rolled up right now to the elbows. I am that guy that's faking the funk. I thought it was going to be cool and it would be warranted all day. Instead, I've just been doing some low-key sweating when I step outdoors. So why did you let me do this?
I don't know, Ben. I guess it's the fact that whenever I got out of the house this morning, it was relatively cool outside. I had shorts on when I went to the gym, and it was like, oh, yeah, this is not ideal. Mind you, I'm wearing jeans, and I'm kind of regretting it right about now that you're saying this.
That's a nice humble brag. You went to the gym this morning. Here's mine. So did I. It was 4:45 in the morning for my workout, and it was feeling really, really good. By the time I got back out of my house to go to, you know, one of the many jobs that I have, it was about 7:15. It was still feeling damn good. And, brother, it's just hot again now. Again, it's not as brutal as it's been for the last month or so. But, yeah, this whole cold front thing, I'm hopeful that it feels just majestic inside a Cajun Field at kickoff tomorrow. I'm hoping that from 7 until 9, 9:30, 10 p.m., that 68 to 72 degrees, I'm hoping it feels every bit of that, and we're enjoying some fall weather. I just don't think I'll be bringing the sleeves out. So you suggested 3:30 to 4. That might be a good way to temper things, because here's a scenario in which this whole huge game for the Cajuns experience doesn't go well for you. You take off work at the risk of being somewhat penalized, perhaps, at like, I don't know, noon or 12:30 tomorrow. You're out there and you're basically baking in the parking lot. Even though you're parking for free, you're basically just baking out there adjacent to Cajun Field. You go to the game. You start throwing back the $2.16 domestics. And somehow, some way, you just don't make it to work quite when you're supposed to, Thursday morning. And especially if the game doesn't go your way, then, yeah, you've just had a bad experience. Now, it's all worth it because these types of atmospheres, whether it's on a weekday or a weekend, they don't come to Cajun Field that often. So all of it's worth it. But I prep all of that to tell you this. Ruffin, you were wrong yesterday. The veteran play is not to take Wednesday off for the tailgate. The veteran play is to take off Thursday, or at least Thursday morning. Because what's more important, being in the parking lot early or being at the game late? I think we all know the answer to that. Not just from what you want from your fan experience, but what the athletic department wants, right? And the football program. They want you there, especially for a competitive ball game, into the third and fourth quarters. They don't want you soused by halftime, trying to maneuver your way around a competitive game in the early to mid-third quarter so you can get to work on time at 8:30 or 9 o'clock. That's not a win for anybody. So, CD, respectfully, I'm going to say that the play is just leave when you normally would. 4, 5. Okay, maybe if you get off work any later than like 5:30, you're going to have to dip out a little bit early.
but just leave as you normally would. Keep listening to us, and then get out there somewhere in that 4:45, 5 o'clock to 6:30 range. That's the sweet spot. It'll be a little bit cooler. You're going to be able to park for free still. Even if there's 20 to 25 large that show up, you're going to be fine. And then you'll be there for the fourth quarter. I think that's what's important, Clint. So there's my little tutorial on how to do tomorrow. If you had to pick one or the other, if you've got the luxury of doing both, hey, you're out there made in the shade early, and you don't have to go in early Thursday, well, I just want your job. But that's my two cents, CD. I'll let you react.
I like that a lot. I like it a lot, especially when you brought up the fact, like, I think having off the Thursday is so much more crucial as opposed to getting off on Wednesday, because then win, lose, tie, whatever it is, you can enjoy it and be able to, the next morning, recover and then get ready to finish out the week strong on a Friday.
You want to be there late in the game. That's the whole bleeping point. Everybody keeps telling me about this bad look on the mothership if it's not packed. Well, here's the deal. If it's packed enough and it's loud and it's competitive, especially if the Cajuns are winning late in the game, everything else will take care of itself. So 15,000 to 20,000 people that are there late and are jacked up about a team that's performing well, that to me is the end goal. And so I'm hoping that we all get that tomorrow night. All right, on the other side of our hour break, we're going to keep talking Raging Cajuns football. Jake DeLome, earlier this week, he went into the Hall of Honor for his Carolina Panthers. I can't wait to preview that UL App State game with a legend. So make sure you're around for that. But right about now, we'll finish this hour with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Bamboozled! And T was a little fooled earlier, and yeah, I guess for a portion of time, so was I. So T, you're not alone. Apparently the whole Zion Williamson and his guest picker thing is, well, not validated. In fact, LSU said there's no truth to one of their student assistants' assertions that the Pels rookie will be the guest picker. So, all right, T, we'll fact check. We'll get back. But it doesn't look like it will be Zion, so we all got a little bamboozled. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back. Jake the Snake joins the program. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you live from Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here, joined as always by the famous Clint D inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And no joke, when I look across the bar and restaurant area from where I'm at right now, our next guest, well, there's a huge poster board of him with his Carolina Panthers uni on. It's only appropriate. So let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline, and it is Jake DeLome. Jake, first of all, congrats on going in a Class of 2019 Hall of Honor inductee for the Carolina Panthers. It's great to have you. And how cool was Sunday?
Well, it wasn't just Sunday. It was the whole weekend. I tell you what, I'm unbelievably honored and grateful to go into the initial Hall of Honor class for the Carolina Panthers. The weekend was fantastic. We had something Friday evening, a great event Saturday evening, and all day Sunday. So, It was great to see a lot of old players that we played with that were back in town, and just to have that moment in the stadium with our names up on that stadium, and they'll be there forever. It was very emotional and just an unbelievable weekend.
Jake, before we talk Cajuns, what did it mean specifically to go in with Steve Smith,
Jordan Gross, Wesley Walls.
Well, you know, three of us, Jordan and Steve and myself, we played at least 7 years together, and if not longer. Jordan and Steve played a little bit longer together, and they also played a couple of years in college together. So to go in with those two guys that I spent many a week studying film, watching film with, and many Sundays together, that was I was just honored just to go in with those two and developed a great relationship with Wesley Walls my whole time in Carolina. We lived in the same neighborhood. Unfortunately, we laugh about it. We crossed paths twice in New Orleans and in Carolina. We missed each other by a year both times. But, you know, he was such a great player for so long and developed a great friendship with him while I was in Carolina and still to this day. So it was great. A lot of ex-players, like I said, came back. And Kerry Collins had come in and Steve Berline. They were both quarterbacks for Wesley. And knowing both those guys well, being an ex-teammate of Kerry Collins, and it was just kind of funny to see to have those guys back and were hanging on the out in the field before the game, and you see Bill Polian come by, and he was one of the architects of building Carolina early on, drafted Kerry Collins, and he was one of the ones that signed Wesley. So it was just such a great moment.
We're joined by Cajuns all-time great Jake Delhomme on 103.7 The Game. All right, let's get to UL. On the eve of a huge matchup, I'll go big picture, Jake, from the players to the fans, even former players like yourself, how do you see people taking to Billy Napier?
It certainly seems like, and I know I'm included in this bunch, couldn't be more excited with what he has done. And it's not only him. I think the staff that he's put together has just been fantastic. And I think you saw it last year. How this team improved as the season went on. And to me, that's the sign of great coaching. I'm not so sure, and I probably said this earlier, I'm not so sure how talented the roster was last year. But just to see him develop players, yeah, we have three stud running backs. I get that. We have, a good wide receiver. But just to watch how they improved defensively and then just to see the new players and how some of the older players have transformed their body and the way they're playing right now and the product on the field is it's extremely fun to watch.
The guy who plays your old position for that team, Levi Lewis, where has he been better this year? And maybe how have they used him to a better extent?
Well, I think the thing with Levi, last year he played the fourth series of every game. So it wasn't like this guy had a ton of experience. And to open up against an SEC opponent, a quality SEC opponent, you saw him get better in the second half than he was in the first half. He had a couple of miscues in the first half. And then as the season has gone on, I think Coach Napier is kind of finding out what he does best. And Levi, hopefully he's relaying the coach what he sees out there and what makes him a better player, what he's comfortable with. And I think we're starting to get better. Early on in the season, we were doing okay in the passing game. I think the last week or two, you're seeing a little bit more. I would love to see him run a little bit more. I think he's very talented with the football in his hand. And he can cause some headaches for defenses. But when you have such a great running game like we have, and I don't think I'm kind of stretching it when I say great. We've got a big-time running game, and it's not just one guy. It's three guys. And a veteran offensive line, and certainly that takes a lot of pressure off of Levi. But I'm looking forward to a progression in the passing game as the season goes on, and hopefully we see a good bit of it tomorrow night.
You've been around the game long enough, Jake. Are there takeaways that you can bring from the two App State games in Boone last year that could apply this year?
Well, I just think, I think Coach Napier said it best. I heard it on the radio, I believe. He said something to the effect of, I'm not so sure this is a rivalry. They've won six, and I don't believe we've won any. So it's not really a rivalry yet. And so hopefully tomorrow night we can start to turn this the other way. I think we played a whole lot better the second time we went played them in the Sun Belt Championship game last year. And we left some football on the field, to be quite honest. And it was at their home stadium. Tomorrow night, a Wednesday night, we'd love to see the crowd out tomorrow night. And I understand it's difficult on a Wednesday night with so many other activities, but it certainly would be a great showcase for our program, especially to beat a program like App State that they have a national brand. They have a national following. And it all started back in their 1AA days, and certainly the Michigan win that they won, and then again this year, beating a North Carolina football team. So there is some name recognition and quality play with that opponent, and hopefully we can put our name up next to them after tomorrow night.
Excited to spend another few moments with Jake DeLome on 103.7 The Game. Are you a believer, Jake, that this defense under Ron Roberts can sustain as one of the best in the Sun Belt for the duration of the season?
I hope so. You know, we rotate a lot of players in there, and you're seeing, you know, sophomores, you're seeing some freshmen. You're starting to see guys that we're developing some depth along that way, and this team just looks different. And when you watch them play, especially the special teams units, I know for me, the kickoff teams and things like that, our team speed, I found, has improved. Our coverage, and that's where you truly find your meat and potatoes of your football team, that special teams core group. And I think that's kind of gone over into the defensive side of the ball. And I'm going to go back to the development of players. It looks like we're developing players. We're making them good football players. We're making them better football players, smarter football players. And if that's the case, I look forward to what's going to happen the rest of the season.
We keep floating this tidbit out there. The Raging Cajuns have not been ranked since 1943. I'm not saying it's guaranteed if you beat App State, but there certainly would exist that possibility. I guess what comes to mind for you when you think about that type of a potential landmark?
Well, I mean, that would be huge for our program, for our coaches, our players, our fans, a sense of pride. I can remember in 1993, our freshman year, we had like 7, 8, 9 votes in the top 25. We had won 7 or 8 games in a row. Unfortunately, we ran into the University of Florida later in that season. But, you know, that's a sense of pride as a program and a step in the right direction. So, you know, we'd love to get one win, and that's tomorrow night. And then you never know what can happen as it goes down the line. But that would definitely put a feather in our cap, especially nationally. One, it's on TV, but two, the App State name and brand. It's pretty strong right now.
Beating Texas A&M like you guys did, obviously that's going to resonate, I think, as the best, most exhilarating win at home in the program's history. But give me some other big Cajun Field moments and the kind of memories that you're hoping can be created tomorrow night with an atmosphere.
Well, I know early on in the Mark Hudson's era, just some of the big wins that the program had, and you know how Coach Hudson brought the enthusiasm back, and I think Cajun fans and Lafayette in general, the Acadiana region, I should say, was dying for a winner. And we saw that on the field. You go to the couple of the UL Monroe wins. I know the one in particular with the onside kick and how we came back to beat them early on in the Husbeth era. That was something that was just special to be a part of and to see that game. And, you know, I know for me, obviously, I can go back to some of the games that we played. Anytime we played an in-state opponent, especially Louisiana Tech, we won the Big West Conference on our home field, beating Louisiana Tech. Again, our senior year when we beat Louisiana Tech here, those are always big moments. I know a homecoming game our freshman year in 1993, we played San Jose State, and they were led by Jeff Garcia. And at the time, 31,000-seat stadium, and there was 28,000 people. It was a cold day, a great day. And it was just fabulous for the players. Just speaking from a player standpoint, there's nothing better than to walk out that tunnel and to see a packed house and to get everybody in the game and to play well and win. Those are memories that you'll remember for the rest of your life. And we'd love to see one of those memories happen tomorrow night.
Final question, Jake. What's your game plan for tomorrow?
Well, I'll be running around a good bit. So, you know, like everybody else, there's always something during the week. So I'll be in and about Cajun Field and pulling for those Cajuns extremely in my mind, in my heart, and in my mouth. You know, it's always fun to be a part of something and to go back. I do get it. It's a Wednesday night. People, especially parents and kids, there's all kind of different football games or soccer games or practices or dancing and things like that. So, you know, any appearance would be a great appearance by any fans of the Cajuns tomorrow night.
Very well said. Jake, again, congrats on the huge honor, not just Sunday, as you mentioned, but all week long. And you've got the Cajuns fans a little more fired up on the radio today. Thanks for the time.
All right, anytime. Take care, Ben.
That's Jake DeLome. I love it. Cajuns are going to be, what do you say, CD, in his mind, in his heart, and in his mouth. That's not bad. You show up tomorrow, you got some vermilion and white on, you got that mentality. Now, look, I'm not going to go full out Friday Night Lights on you, right? CD, remind me of that right now. Give me the full Friday Night Lights mantra.
The full Friday Night Lights mantra, it's some something full hearts can't lose. I can't remember the whole thing off the top of my head. This is bugging me right now.
Clear eyes?
There we go.
Or is that just like a Ben Stein commercial?
No,
it's not just for red eyes anymore.
Yeah, clear eyes, full hearts can't lose. That's the full drop right there.
There you go. And so Jake DeLome gives you the Raging Cajuns version of that. That was a lot of fun. Always love catching up with Jake DeLome. Glad we got to do it. Sandwiched in between a huge week for him and a monumental night, potentially, for Raging Cajuns football. All right, we're going to take a timeout, but we'll be right back. To Pete Son Johnson with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
The league's too hard to just be overconfident. Every week's a tough week, and we got a lot of work to do. Still got some guys who are waiting to get back from injury, and that game by no means was perfect. I thought our defense played four great quarters from the first play to the last play. I think our special teams obviously struggled, and I was real disappointed how the offense finished in the fourth quarter.
That is Kyle Shanahan, San Francisco 49ers head coach, not content, not happy with 4-0. I've got some things to say about that. You may as well. As we come back into Pete's on Johnston, I do want to salute and tip the cap to Jake DeLome. I think one of our better interviews together. Jake's good enough to come on virtually any time that we've ever asked him. And so not only really cool, and somewhere I think 20-year-old Ben, maybe 19-year-old Ben, is pretty geeked about the fact that, you know, these type of interviews are actually happening and possible. But I think that was one of his better visits on the program. So thanks again to Jake DeLome. But I want to touch on the Monday Night Football game. 31-3, the Niners thump the Cleveland Browns in Santa Clara. I'll give my reaction, get some of your take as well, because this ties in, especially on the 49ers part of the ledger, this ties in with the Saints. So call us up, let us know what you think. 706-0111. And it ties into the Saints because somehow, someway, the 4-0 San Francisco 49ers, last undefeated team left in the NFC, somehow the mothership and their series of computers had the 49ers now as the odds-on favorite to win the conference. What? Hold on now. I understand that they're winning football games. In fact, I understand they have not lost a football game. And, look, they haven't exactly just been devouring powder puffs. If you look at the schedule, they deserve at least a little bit of credit. They won at the Bucks, at the Bengals, versus the Steelers, and versus the Browns. So basically, they have demolished three-quarters of the AFC North. But winning at the Bucks, maybe you could argue that was before Jameis and company really got started. But, boy, that offense has looked good against a lot of people. Not necessarily the Saints, but that's a win that gets them some kudos in my book. I mean, on the road at Tampa to start the year, they beat a Browns team that had won two in a row, was starting to kind of strut a little bit. Okay, but now we're going to start to see what they're really about, because the 49ers, excuse me, they're going to be playing at the Rams this Sunday. They've got the Panthers coming up fairly soon, the Seahawks, the Packers, the Ravens, the Saints, the Rams, the Seahawks again. We're going to learn some things about the 49ers, but this whole statistical index saying that Kyle Shanahan's team, the odds-on favorite to win the NFC, no, that can't be. In fact, I wouldn't even have them in the top two, maybe in the top three teams in the conference. So I'm willing to acknowledge that the 49ers are the surprise story from around the NFL. And, Clint, the irony of all ironies here, who did I say this year was going to take the biggest leap forward from the NFC?
You said it was the Chicago Bears.
No, I did not. See, I told you, you don't listen to this program. I told you last year it was the Bears, and they became a playoff team. I gave you the 49ers this year. I said it would be the 49ers in the NFC and the Jags in the AFC. Well, certainly I didn't pick Gardner Minshew. But I've been on this for a while. San Fran picking up their win total. But I never did think they could be one of the top two or three teams in the NFC. And I'm not necessarily ready to buy in on that now. I know they've got a former Sun Belt player that's just running loose right now in the backfield in Matt Breda. I get the fact that Jimmy G isn't the interception machine that he was in August. They certainly have surpassed my expectations, but I still have a ceiling on how good they can be. I've got Seattle to win. I think at this point Seattle might be my favorite to win that division. I think the 49ers might have to hold on a little bit to make the playoffs, unless you end up with three teams out of that NFC West. Because it's still hard for me to think the Rams won't eventually make their way there. I'll give you a pass on a bit of show amnesia, but I absolutely pick San Fran. You go back to the book it picks, I think that's in there, brother.
I'm going to have to dig around for that. I mean, I'm just still flabbergasted that at the beginning of the year you did predict that the Bears had the number one seed. So maybe that's what I'm thinking
about. That's what it was. It's exactly what it was. I told you that the Bears would be the top seed in the NFC and the Rays would have the biggest win differential movement. But, man, this whole idea that suddenly the San Francisco 49ers are God's gift to football, we might need to calm down a little bit. But what we also know is that the Browns, they don't have a true identity yet. And head coach Freddie Kitchens, former Roll Tider, saying he's going to take the blame for OBJ's poor showing on a Monday night.
I like to put our guys out there to be successful. And when they're not successful, it's my fault, because I didn't diminish the role or increase the role enough, whatever it may be. I'll have to go back and look at it. He wasn't successful tonight. So ultimately that falls on me.
Hard for any wide receiver to be successful if his quarterback is abysmal. And Clint, I'll give you another one here. How many fantasy points for Baker Mayfield last night?
I believe it was still in the single digits last I checked, because I had him on one of my fantasy teams, and I saw he was like a negative 0.32 near halftime, so I'm almost certain it was below 10.
It was 2 for one of my buddies. And so hard to win fantasy games. Here's the thing. It's based on stats. Hard to win reality games when your quarterback plays that way. And yet Freddie Kitchens, he's doing what a good coach does. He's taking up for his guy. It's not all on Baker.
You know, I think so much of the quarterback has to do with the things around him, just like every week. I mean, you know, last week he played good because the guys around him played good. You know, the quarterback can't do it himself, so he doesn't. This is the reason football is the ultimate team game. It takes 11 guys, and one guy doesn't do what he's supposed to do, then you have a not successful play.
All right, fair enough. But here's the problem. Not only was there hype, but he's your starting quarterback, recently taken number one overall. And now there are second stringers in the league who are winning games like it's going out of style. Teddy Bridgewater, Kyle Allen, Gardner Minshew, Jacoby Brissett, who absolutely belongs in the category of backups. That's what he was, you know, about 6 or 7 weeks ago before the Andrew Luck bombshell. So for me, that's something that is incredible. I mean, even Chase Daniel helped pilot the Bears toward a win in the second half against the Vikings, not this past Sunday in London, but the week prior. So backups are suddenly getting the job done, which, of course, is frightening. But if you are expected to be one of the next up-and-comers, and then you're thudding and splatting against the wall right now to the extent that Baker Mayfield is, there are going to be some big-time questions and maybe, just maybe, some more drama in the mistake by the lake in Cleveland, Ohio. So we had to look back a little bit at Monday Night Football and the end of another week in the NFL. And after this coming break, I'm ready to throw some shade. I referenced this in our opening segment. A Florida player on the current team won't let go of what Florida players a couple years ago did to rub some salt in the wounds after the most recent Mike the Tiger passed away. I can't believe this is still a thing. It is absolutely LSU Florida Hate Week, And we'll go ahead and fan the flames for that fire when we return. And then an interview coming up in about 18 minutes with Jake Madison, Locked On Pelicans podcasting. You don't want to miss it. It all comes before Matt Desimo and the Ascension Episcopal Blue Gators invade Pete's for their prep power hour 6 until 7. So don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick timeout, and then we'll be back to Pete's on Johnson with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, it is time to throw some shade as we saunter back into Pete's on Johnston. How about a little bit of pre-shade, CD? I mentioned earlier, we talked Baker Mayfield and the dud the Browns laid on national television in San Fran last night. Credit to San Fran. They are one of the best teams in the NFC. I just don't think they're at the tip top. And neither is Baker, and neither are the Browns. In fact, I mentioned Baker Mayfield got one of my buddies 2 points for his fantasy efforts last night. Credit to Joshua K. on Facebook for hollering at the show. Baker Mayfield got him -1 based on the metrics of his specific league. You literally would have been better off not inserting him into the lineup. I kind of wonder if that's how Freddie Kitchens feels about, you know, reality football. But to me, that absolutely slayed me. -1. Good thing our guy Joshua K said he already had the lead that he needed prior to that dud from Baker. All right, that's a pretty good segue into my daily reminder. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, and the standing seam metal awnings. But know that, hey, that's just a listing of inventory. What they really specialize in at Patio Center is helping you to customize things to fulfill whatever vision that you sit down and create with the leadership. Top down, starting with Mark. But know this, that the pros at Patio Center, they want to up your patio game. It all starts with a trip to their website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
I hope you like your LSU Florida week spicy. It was always going to be that way. But everybody is coming out to play, not only with what they're saying to reporters, they're coming out to play with what they're posting on social media as well. And to that end, come on down, Ciante Lewis, tight end for the Florida Gators. He tweeted and then deleted the following. There's a huge picture of him walking around an empty Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, I would imagine sometime a couple of years back. And he's carrying around that skeleton-looking type of tiger slash dinosaur that's got the Mardi Gras beads around it. And so already, he's throwing all kind of shade right into the soul, not just of LSU fans, but basically animal lovers everywhere. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, tree-hugging PETA animal lovers, like just people who genuinely love animals. But then he accompanied it with the following message. Almost 3 years since that cat over there died. It's that time again. Beat LS who? Wow. Just go ahead. Keep poking the Bengal tiger, guys. It's amazing right now that the level people will stoop to. And I'm not saying that LSU student-athletes, certainly not fans, I'm not saying that they would be past some antics that might stoop down to a pretty low level, but this is pretty base, right? Because now you're not just going after the players, I don't know, the coach, the fans, the stadium. Now you're going after the death of a live Bengal tiger mascot, one that had radiation and died of cancer. So, good on you, I guess, Ciante Lewis. If you felt that that was going to add the right type of fuel to the fire, then you got to do you. But coming back on the back end and deleting that tweet, that's the type of cowardice that I won't ever condone or get behind. If you're going to be man enough to hit send after all those times that Herm Edwards tries to remind you, think before you hit send. Breathe before you hit send. If you're still going to be dumb enough to hit send when you know you shouldn't, dumb enough to where you delete it, yeah, this one might be on you, big guy. What happens to you Saturday night, that might also be on you.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
I'm hard-pressed to be the guy who says, hey, there's a certain way that you have to smack talk, right? There's a certain way that you have to take a dig at your rival. I think there probably are a lot of ways that you can do it. That, to me, is just one where probably you can't, especially if you're going to take it back. And any time that you have to go that route on social media, yeah, I mean, that's that old ready, fire, aim strategy, right? Just spray it, see how many casualties they are, and then try to, you know, take care of the damage on the backside. It's never a good look. Now, what I think was an interesting look is the way that Joe Burrow, Caleb Vaughn Chaisson, Braden Fajoco, the way that those three opted to go, I guess that falls within the category of right way to talk smack. We played some of that sound earlier in the program. If you need it in your life, just search for Jacques Doucet, WAFB on Twitter. It's pretty good stuff. And LSU's players not holding back not even an inch on saying that they don't like Florida. They know that Florida doesn't like them. They hate the way that the quarterback pranced around like he won the Super Bowl last year. Of course, that was Braden Fajoco. He couldn't remember a name. Let me help him out. That was Felipe Franks. But, yeah, it's on. No question about it. Saturday night in Death Valley. Interesting approach, certainly, from Ciante Lewis. And I'm sure there will be a number of ways LSU fans let him, the Florida team, and their fans know all about it. I will reiterate what I said earlier in the show. As relatively genteel and peaceful and docile, relatively, as LSU fans have kind of become in these tailgates, welcoming in strangers from other teams, right? Come get the boudin, come get the gumbo, come get the jambalaya. We got some beer for you. As much as that's become more of the culture compared to, say, 20, 25 years ago, I think a lot of that goes by the wayside this Saturday. That's just my gut feel. All right, we got Jake Madison coming up on the other side. Time to talk Pels basketball, an impressive preseason win in Atlanta last night. And then we got the Ascension Episcopal Blue Gators, the one and only Blue Gators. Coach Matt Desimo and company, they'll be with us live from 6 to 7. We got plenty of show to go and a lot of fun to be had at Pete's on Johnston. So after a quick timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. Final run in our 5 o'clock hour. In this hour, it's been all about the Jakes. We had the pleasure of catching up with Jake Delhomme earlier. That's right, former Raging Cajun star, and now we're going to turn it over to our resident Jake, who drops dimes on the Pelicans. Heading out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. And, of course, it is Jake Madison, Locked on Pelicans podcasting. Jake, how goes it?
Pretty good. Excited that we're seeing some real on-the-court basketball happening now.
We had it last night in the ATL. Pelicans 133-109 winners over the Hawks. And, of course, everybody will want your diagnosis of Zion Williamson, his debut performance in the preseason. 16 points, 7 rebounds, 3 dimes, and 3 rips in 28 minutes. What impressed you the most?
You know, just obviously the way he moves. This is a guy who's just got a nose for the basket in different ways to score, whether it's throwing down thunderous dunks or just kind of contorting his body in midair and kind of floating to be able to show off that finesse and get a layup. He has a variety of different ways that he can score, and the Pelicans used him in a number of very good ways to kind of get him opening in ways that kind of keep him moving towards the basket with some momentum where it's just almost impossible to keep him away from the rim at that point. And he looked good overall. The jumper needs a little bit of work. Defense left a lot to be desired. But overall, he's just an exciting player to watch. Can grab a rebound, get in transition and run. You saw the passing from him as well. So we saw, you know, the passing where he's picking out guys in the corner, hitting that Brandon Ingram for the corner three. Overall, just exactly what you want to see. The Pelicans are keeping expectations low on him, but he might have raised the bar a little bit with that preseason performance yesterday.
Unbelievable. It's the second week of October, and the hype continues to grow. We always discuss, when you come on this program, Jake, the benefits of getting Jrue Holiday more and more off the ball. It was thought, hey, that's why you bring in Elfrid Payton last year. Well, now you've got Lonzo Ball. So some of your first reaction to watching Lonzo run the point, and then Jrue goes hog wild, 21 points in 18 minutes.
Yeah, this is why you want a point guard alongside Jrue Holiday. This is why Jrue Holiday says he works best off the ball. And you saw it, 21 points. He led the team in scoring the other night. He did it in a variety of ways, whether it was getting to the rim or his three-point shot, which looked a little bit better, a little bit more consistent. And he could be in line for a very big scoring season. If you go back to the playoffs against the Portland Trailblazers when they had Rajon Rondo in that four-game sweep, he was the two-guard basically the entirety of the time. He looked very good in that series, put up 30-plus points in one game, 40-plus points in the closeout game. He could be in store for a massive year, and this is why David Griffin says he has MVP potential in him, and that's due to Lonzo Ball being in the backcourt, too, who can handle the playmaking duties, getting other guys open, making the right pass to them, and just creating a little bit of space for others. Lonzo also very clearly had some chemistry going early on with Zion Williamson. They work well in the pick and roll together, in the pick and pop, and in some pistol action where you kind of see them going up on the side, creating a pick and roll or a dribble handoff that way too. Overall, you can see a lot of these pieces really complement each other on this Pelicans roster, and that's why they put up 133 points the other night.
Smack dab in the middle of football season, but it's always the right time to catch up with Jake Madison. Locked On Pelicans podcasting. And it's always our pleasure to have him when we're live at Pete's on Johnston. Okay, outside of making sure that Jrue can play off the ball, everybody's been clamoring for a decade, it feels like, for an athletic scoring wing. Enter Brandon Ingram. I guess your thoughts on his performance last night and how he's progressing.
You know, it started off pretty slowly. He didn't look good for the first two periods of that first half, I think, because he was clearly playing a little bit more isolation ball. The ball kind of stopped once it hit his hands. It didn't seem to get out of there, derailing the Pelicans with their faster pace offense. It slowed the game down a little bit. He did a lot of work just to take contested long twos, had a quiet first half because of that. But in the third quarter, when he was kind of allowed to be the focal point of the offense, you saw him be that very good scoring wing that we saw with the Los Angeles Lakers last year once LeBron James went down. Put up 11 of his 19 in the third quarter, did it with three-point shooting by getting to the rim, not just settling for mid-range jumpers. Once his shot selection improved, you saw it do wonders for his offensive game. Maybe just took him a little bit to kind of get into the rhythm of the and flow of the game and, you know, kind of just meshing with these guys a little bit. It takes a while to build some team chemistry, but you could see all that he's capable of, why they were so high on him in that Anthony Davis trade with the Lakers. Again, 11 of his 19 in the third quarter, and once he gets cooking, he's pretty tough to stop, and it just gives the Pelicans another threat offensively that if you need a guy who can just go and get you a bucket, maybe that's Brandon Ingram.
I continue to monitor the box score and wonder which of some of the also-rans, if you will survive that role into the actual season. And so enter into the discussion Nicolò Melli. I guess your thoughts on the Italian national performer, and at 6'9", 235, is there a spot for maybe double-digit minutes a night for him during the regular season?
Yeah, I think so. He looked good in the open practice for the Pelicans had, which you don't want to read too much into something like that where they weren't playing much defense, but he moves like an NBA player. And this is a guy who's a rookie but has been a pro for over a decade in various stops over in Europe. His shot wasn't falling a lot last night. I think he was 1 of 6 from the field overall, or 1 of 6 from deep, and didn't adequately space the court as much as you'd like. But he does a number of other things that just really fit what this Pelicans team is trying to do. He's a strong rebounder, and he's comfortable enough with the ball in his hands and his dribble handles that once he grabs that board, he'll push it up the court, get the Pelicans into a half-court set, or get them into transition offense very, very quickly, playing that Gentry style of ball. that they want to do. He's comfortable passing too. You see it whenever the ball hits him, he's looking for another open guy to move the ball to. He's not open for a shot. It's going to keep the defense guessing just a little bit. This is a guy who I think is really important. You need to space the court around Zion Williamson just to make things a little bit easier for him. If his shot starts falling, he's going to be a threat anywhere he is on the court. Pair him with Zion Williamson. It's going to make both of their lives easier. I think he's in store for a pretty big year.
Coming down the stretch with Jake Madison. You can, you should follow him on Twitter, at Nola Jake. Listen to his work daily, LockedOnPelicans.com. What else is important between now and the beginning of the regular season and later this month? What else would you like to see for Alvin Gentry's club?
Yeah, the biggest thing is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. We knew offensively they were going to be good, and they showed it last night. But they did struggle defensively. They're integrating a new defensive system with Jeff Bizdelic coming over from the Houston Rockets. They are not going to switch on everything, meaning they're not going to be having that cross-positional versatility as much as they have in years past. It's going to be point guards trying to stay on point guards, bigs trying to stay on bigs. They'll switch strategically when they need to and get those cross matches. But overall, they're all trying to learn a new defensive system right now. And you saw them struggle on rotations, on who the tag man was, other things like that. They were good at pressing the point of attack. Drew Holiday hounded Trae Young for the entirety of that third quarter. But once the ball got out of the point guard's hands and other guys started moving, the Pelicans looked a little bit lost. You saw Zion Williamson be clueless, like completely clueless out there on one or two possessions. It leaves a lot to be desired when you look at how this team is going to try and function and win games, and they need to get stops. You can't play in transition if you're inbounding the ball from under your own basket after an opponent make. You need to force a miss. You need to grab that defense board, and then you'll be able to kind of get out and run. But if they're not getting those stops, it could be tough going on offense a little bit for the team. So I'm hopeful we'll see the defense improve. It's the first preseason game. They've really only had like six practices together. Mistakes are bound to be made early on as they start to figure things out a little bit more. And I think that should be significantly better by the time that the opening night game comes around.
All right, final question, Jake, and we'll put you on the spot. 8th day of October, will the Pelicans be pushing for a playoff berth the last week or two of the season?
I'm on the spot with this one. Let's be optimistic. The season hasn't even started yet. I think they will. You can see they are going to be able to keep up with anyone offensively. They have all the tools there, all of the players there to be an elite defensive team. Yes, they're going to be young. Yes, they might lose a couple games early on because there's only six holdovers from the squad last year, and you've got to develop some chemistry. But when they do that, they are going to be a tough out, and they're going to surprise a lot of teams. So I think they're going to be in contention all year long.
It's always fun to do this, Jake, and we're getting excited about the Pelicans' big season as well. Thanks for jumping aboard. Talk to you soon.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
The great Jake Madison talking about WBD. Won't bow down. And everybody getting ready to flock up. It's going to be a lot of fun. I don't know if they're a playoff team yet, but I know they're in a lot better position going forward than they were all of last year. I think that, along with Zion Williamson, is part of the excitement for just about everyone. And, yeah, we've got an awful lot of excitement here as well, hanging out at Pete's on Johnston. And the final hour of the show, it is solely dedicated to the one and only Blue Gators. Ascension Episcopal football will be in the house. Matt Desimo, Eric Mouton, these Blue Gators players, I'm excited to have them here. So make sure you stay locked in. A big program, and it's only just getting started as it's starting to get a lot of fun, and it's about to get loud in here. We'll be right back out to Pete's Bumper to Bumper Sports, ready to pass the baton. It's time for Ascension Episcopal's Prep Power Hour on 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Oh,
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Hello and welcome to Pete's on Johnston. It's time to celebrate Ascension Episcopal football. It's the Blue Gators Prep Power Hour. Excited to have them all here. And they're going to keep filing in. I'm glad to have you as well on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love joined right out the gate by head coach Matt Desimo. Blue Gators 3-2 on the season and in the midst of a tough 7-2A district. Coach, great to have you here. You enjoyed practicing in slightly less hot and humid temps today?
Yeah, well, it was pretty nice. A nice little change up from the heat we've been having.
Give me a little bit of insight. A 3-2 start to the season. You begin with a win at Erath. Another win against Catholic Point Capiz. Beat Generette on the road, and a tough OT loss to North Vermilion. And last week, on the wrong side to Catholic New Iberia. So 3 up, 2 down. Sum it up for me.
You know, we came out at the beginning of the season, had a good start to the year against Erath, a good Erath ball club. You know, it was a battle for 48 minutes, hot, humid, especially throughout the year. Our guys, you know, they battled the whole time for 48 minutes. We were able to come out on top, and then kind of the same situation the next week. Against Catholic Point Capiz at home, you know, that's always a big battle for us. You know, the type of offense they run and how physical they play. You know, we're able to come out on top of that one. And then in week three, you know, North Vermilion, you know, we made some mistakes here and there. But you know, our guys once again battled for even actually more than 48 minutes going to overtime. But, you know, we just came up a little bit short. That their players made some plays, you know, towards the end, and we couldn't quite come out on top. You know, then we went back to Generette, and our guys took care of business, played the way we were supposed to, and, you know, we finished that one off the right way. And then last week was a rough one. You know, we started off, we had three quick turnovers, and hard to recover from that.
I remember vividly 2 years ago, you brought a freshman quarterback here. Now he's a junior quarterback, Cole Simone. At the time, he was taking over for Jake, who was injured. I guess, how have you seen him grown in leading this Blue Gators offense?
You know, he's come a long way. You know, as a freshman, you know, freshman shouldn't be put in that position, but you know, we didn't have much of a choice, and you know, he stepped up and he was ready to go, and you know, he did everything we asked of him. You know, the past 2 years as a sophomore and as a junior, so far this year, you know, he's been the go-to guy for us. You know, he makes good decisions, puts the ball where it needs to be, and you know, he does what we ask of him, and he's done a great job with that the past 2 years and continues to get better each week.
Give me a little bit of the flavor from the guys that are handling the rock, whether it's your running backs, a group of wide receivers that, look, at this point, they're following in the footsteps of Ronald LeBlanc, who's now on campus at UL, Zach Ronquillo, Seth Kerstetter. Who are some of the next guys up that are stepping up for the Blue Gators?
Yeah, you know, so far it's kind of been a rough year for those guys. You know, we're down a couple guys, Willie Kerstetter and Gus Mare. Both are out right now, you know, but we got some young guys stepping up, some inexperienced guys that have done a really good job. You know, Anthony Quibido has been playing our H receiver, our slot receiver, and has done a really good job all year long, making really good plays, catching the ball and blocking, you know, when he doesn't have the ball. You know, and then, you know, stepping up has been Logan Overton and Jude Ordwin, who have been our kind of starting outside guys since we had some injuries. You know, those guys have done a really good job focusing in and taking care of business, and, you know, we got a couple other guys, you know, rotating in and out, you know, this week. Austin Mills, a freshman, can get some reps here and there, you know, after some more injuries and things like that. But you know, those guys have stepped up and have done a really good job all year long, you know, rotating in different positions, things like that.
Coach Matt Desimo, our guest, as we're kicking off the Blue Gators Prep Power Hour on 103.7 The Game. We're still live at Pete's on Johnston. A bit of a look ahead. You've got Delcom. It'll be a road test this Friday. And as you told me before we came on, it's a wing tee offense, something you got to spend some time preparing for.
Absolutely. You know, and they do a good job with it. Coach Artie Liuza, who has done a really good job. You know, we've been facing him for a while, even before he's at Delcom, when he's at Highland Baptist, was in our district back then. You know, he does a really good job coaching that wing tee and teaching it and calling plays. So, you know, defensively we'll have to be sound, gap sound, and play physical and do our jobs. Otherwise, they're going to gash us.
Defensively, who is this a big week for in your front seven in particular?
You know, up front, you know, for those big guys up front, you know, they have to be able to hold their gap and know what gap they have, because if they're not, then guards and tackles will get to linebackers and get to the second level, and, you know, it's going to be a long night. So, you know, up front, all our guys that rotate in there, Borden Bernard, Ethan Leone, Cade Guillory, Clay Onslet, Cole Griffith, you know, we kind of play by committee up front. You know, on the defensive side, all those guys have to take care of their jobs and do their jobs for us to be successful.
You look at the season so far, and maybe with the exception of last week, that defense has really done a good job of helping to hold on to some leads. I guess the guys, some of them I know you just mentioned, who are leading on that side.
Yeah, you know, like I said, some of those guys up front. But, you know, Blake Pearson's our starting linebacker who's a senior this year, who's been playing, you know, starting for sure for 2 years, playing for 3 years. You know, he does a good job getting guys lined up, making calls, making sure we're in the right spots. You know, in our secondary, we have a really, really experienced, really good secondary with Andrew Stolzenthal and Jaime Cordova at safeties and Eli Fournette at cornerback. You know, we just have one new secondary guy stepping up, and it's been Trey Mare mostly, and, you know, Wide Fox has played some there too. So, you know, we're very fortunate to have a good experienced secondary. But all those guys have done a really good job. You know, we have guys stepping up at different positions. Hayden Cormier has done a good job at inside backer. And Andre DiMaggio's a returning starter at outside backer. So, you know, all our guys have been playing really well and flying to the ball and doing some really good things this year.
It's a program in Ascension Episcopal that has played for a state title in the Dome last year to the state quarterfinals in Division III. I guess talk about the pride. This program, it feels like it wasn't that long ago that this thing was new. Now all of a sudden you're established and you're trying to continue doing the same things as you move up the ladder in classification.
Yeah, you know, we felt like we've gotten, you know, to a good point. You know, we worked hard. The kids, you know, some of these kids that are on the team now, their older brothers were there our first years at Ascension. You know, they've come a long way. You know, the school as a whole, not just the football program, but you know, our fan base and things like that. You know, when it first started, you know, it wasn't really a football program. You know, we had some guys that played and we had some fans that would go and watch, but it didn't have that atmosphere, that excitement. And, you know, our guys have done a really good job of building upon that from year to year. And, you know, I feel like we have, you know, a great team from great teams from fifth grade up to high school. You know, our fifth and sixth graders and seventh and eighth graders are playing tonight to try to lock in league championships in their league. You know, and that's where it starts, you know, with those young guys building the program. So, you know, I think for us as a whole, we've grown, you know, from top to bottom, and, you know, we continue to get better and continue to grow every year.
I know you don't do it on your own, and you'd probably be the first to tell me that. How about some of the assistants, the coordinators that make your life a little bit easier?
You know, I feel like we have one of the best coaching staffs in the state. You know, I'd put our staff up against anyone else, you know. Defensively, this year we have new coordinators. Stephen Heron and Heath Whittington are our co-coordinators. They took over from Scott McCullough last year, who's still here with us, still helping us out. You know, and like I just said, you know, we have Scott McCullough, who's been coaching for 40 years, you know, is at Acadiana, I think, for 31 years. And then we have Brandon Mitchell helping with our D-line who has so much experience. You know, you can't teach that, you know, the levels he's played, things he's done. Then, you know, we turn it over offensively. You know, Jay DiMaggio, who was the head coach at Lafayette High, who was an offensive coordinator. You know, he helps out. He's our quarterback's coach and helps out with offense, and he's our special teams coordinator. And then we got two other CCPs. Taj Lopez is a young guy who's been helping. This will be his third year. He works with our receivers, does a really good job. And we picked up a new guy, Lane Broussard, this year, who's a young guy who, you know, finished high school a couple of years ago, trying to get into the profession, who's a hard worker and does a good job. So, you know, I feel like we have a really good coaching staff. And like I said, I'd put those guys up against, you know, up match to match with any staff in the state.
You know, it's funny you said that about Scott McCullough. His son, Matt, and Acadiana High were here last week in this exact same spot. And he said, you ought to see that staff that my dad's on these days. So I think it's pretty well recognized throughout the area. Speaking of family connections, a lot of people, I think, obviously familiar with your brother and what he's done, not only as a player, but now as a coach. And right now those Raging Cajuns, they're doing awfully well. So I would have to imagine that Mike's life pretty good.
Absolutely, yeah. They're enjoying it this year. You know, they're having a great season, but you know, they put in a lot of hours into that. You know, that doesn't just happen. Those guys, that coaching staff, does a great job with those kids. And, you know, like I said, I mean, they're there all day, every day, pretty much.
It's incredible. And they've got a big platform tomorrow night. So any of the kids that want to get out early and go, is that an option? Or, man, we just practice in Youngsville until we're done?
Well, Wednesday, we'll be done pretty early tomorrow for our guys that want to go and check that game out.
That'll be cool. It's been a big topic of conversation. How many people can get out there on a Wednesday? Good to know the Blue Gators got that opportunity. Coach, best of luck the rest of the season. I know it's Delcom this Friday night on the road, and then making your path toward and hopefully through the Division III state playoffs. Thanks again, Coach.
Thank you, Pat.
All right, a quick break. When we return, I'm going to bring on the AD. Yeah, excited to have Eric Mouton join us. This is the Prep Power Hour for Ascension Episcopal, and we'll be right back out to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
And right back in to Pete's on Johnston. Make some noise. Ascension Episcopal, it is your Prep Power Hour. Blue Gators in the house, and we're thrilled to have them on 103.7 The Game. We'll make a transition one coach to another. We just had Matt Desimo, the football side, and now it's time, Eric Mouton, former Raging Cajuns basketball player, head coach of the boys basketball side, and yeah, you wear a lot of hats, AD as well. Coach, great to have you back.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having us.
All right, give me the rundown of how you see this football program. We got some of that from Coach Desimo, where it started, where it is, and where you think it can continue to go.
This football program has come a long way in a short period of time, and the Desimo brothers are a big part of that. We started with Randy Johnson and then made the switch to Mike, who brought in Matt as one of his assistant coaches. And we knew we were hoping to keep Mike as long as we could, but we knew there'd be other opportunities for him. And one day he walks into my office and said, "Man, I got to talk to you about something. Coach Hud just offered me a job back at UL." So I was kind of shocked and knew we had to do something quick. He said, "Look, I'm thinking about it. We'll see where it goes from here." Comes in a little while later and says, "I'm taking the job." And so we had to find a coach, and Coach Matt was very interested and said that from the beginning. And he was a strong candidate from the start. We did interview a couple of other coaches, but at the end of the day, we felt like the transition from Mike to Matt would be the easiest thing for the entire team, and it was a smooth transition with the success that Coach Matt has had.
Winning on the field is the most important thing, I would imagine, other than forming a young man, young woman, the student-athlete experience. But I think to really, I guess, attain some notoriety in the area statewide, you put some skins on the wall with your young men and women that get to go in and play some college sports. This program has that.
Yep.
Let's focus on a couple of those guys. What can you say about Michael Remenday? Currently on a top 30 team in the country for Tulane.
Yep. Big Mike was someone who came in. He was actually in Eli's class in that same graduating class of 2018. And early on, when Mike was still around, he said, "This kid's going to be special." I said, "Mike?" He said, "Oh, yeah, Mike." He said, "He's got great feet. He's going to get stronger. He's going to get bigger." And he said, "He's a college prospect." I said, "Man." And he saw that early on. And he was absolutely right. And what a lot of those guys have done to help the program, and like you said, to bring us that success, and then to send guys to the next level. It's very important for our program to do that, because a lot of them come in and say, "Well, you know, you're not sending kids to college, you're not getting the exposure." Well, we absolutely are, and you know, it's just showing in what these kids are able to do.
And sometimes, like in Remenday's case, it's a straight line. Other times, you kind of make your path. If I'm not mistaken, that's what Ronald LeBlanc is doing right now, making his way back to Lafayette to play for the Raging Cajuns of Billy Napier.
That's right. Went off to Coffeyville Junior College out in Kansas and had two good years there. Got to get on the field, got to play, got to compete, and then came back with Coach Mike and walked on. Yes, Ronald LeBlanc is back in Lafayette with the Raging Cajuns.
We're talking now with the head coach of the basketball side, Eric Mouton, but certainly takes a lot of pride in this Blue Gators football program. Give me your take. The start to the season, I know you call every single game, so you're intimately involved, but the things they've done that have even kind of impressed and surprised you.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. I mean, they're so well coached, and the offensive line was a strength coming in with a couple of question marks in other areas, but what these guys are doing is very impressive. You know, we had the little hiccup with Catholic High, but I know Coach Matt and the staff, the veteran staff, as y'all talked about a little bit earlier, will have these guys ready to go for the rest of the season. And you know, it's fun to watch what Cole Seymour has done and the wide receivers and the running backs. And then you get to the defensive side of the ball, and they're always where they're supposed to be and making plays. And I think they're going to do that for the rest of the season and into the playoffs.
So I've been involved a little bit with being on broadcast calls for collegiate sports. You've been doing that a lot lately for the Raging Cajuns. And I'll still say there's nothing like a Friday night for high school football. Now that you're doing those broadcasts, do you feel the same?
I do. Friday night under the lights is just a special time for for your community. You know, it's when everybody really comes together and pulls for this football team. It may not be the most important part of your school, but it's the most visible part of your school. So, you know, we always want to make sure we do it right over there. We treat other teams and treat referees and everyone that comes to our stadium the right way. And I'd like to think all of our coaches and all of our kids act the right way, and that's very important to our school.
Tell me about some of these young men, the student-athletes that will come and suit up on the hardwood for you. I know we all love our multi-sport athletes. Who are they this year?
We got a couple of them that will – Willie Kerstetter is not one. Cole Seymour is not one. I see him raising their hands over there. All those guys do is shoot threes. I got enough guys that shoot threes. But we got we'll have a few guys coming over, Matt Remenday, Maxie Baudouin, Anthony Quibodeau, Alex Doge. We got a big group of kids that don't play football, as we do start practice on Monday for basketball. So I have about
you just threw me for a loop.
Kids.
I can't believe we're already there.
October 14th, first day of official LHSAA practice. So I've got 15 that don't play, so we're going to get in the gym and start working, and then after these guys win a state championship, we'll have them come over and play a little basketball too.
You know, I'll get your 2 cents on that subject because you occupy a seat where you have to think about these things, and you've probably been to the LHSAA, the LSA meetings. The idea that this year, that championship, we don't know where it will be. We just know it won't be in the dome.
Right.
Your 2 cents.
Well, I don't know if I want to give my 2 cents, but, you know, it's just disappointing as it continues to split. You know, I wish we were all together, and I wish everybody would be able to compete for one state championship in our classification. I wish it would have stayed that way, but once it started, it seems like it kind of started the snowball. And
I'm hopeful this is the nuclear option and the only way to get back together.
To get back together.
You think we'll get there?
I don't know. It's not looking like it. I sure hope we do. But, you know, I wish we were still in the dome, and I wish basketball and baseball and softball and every other sport was still competing and playing together and at minimum playing at the same state championship venues. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
When we first did this a few years ago, it was still about District 7-1A. It was still you guys, kind of the heavy, frankly, over LCA at that point. They've turned into something a little different, and they kind of followed you into 2A, albeit in a different district. How has that move over the last few years changed the athletic program and, in particular, this football team?
I think we were ready. You know, I think these guys stepped up and said, you know, we're going to play with whoever they put in front of us. And I think we were ready to step up to 2A, and we've had a lot of success there. And I think all the way across at the district level, we've been very successful. And then onto the playoffs and into the state championships. So I think we were ready. I think, you know, we're still in 2A. They're going to add Homa Christian, which we have to go down and play in a couple of weeks. But, you know, these guys have been ready, and the off-season conditioning has been huge into being able to compete at that level, and not just in football but in every sport. Coach Matt does a great job with some of those guys in the weight room all summer long, and it's not just strength, it's the conditioning part of it too. So having a first-class facility to be able to train these kids has been huge for us.
Just as a follow-up, staying at 2A, no plans to leave in terms of enrollment?
We'll have to see. We'll just have to keep an eye on it. And, you know, we got 2 years of 2A, and we'll see where the numbers fall after that.
Another few moments. Our pleasure to have Eric Mouton with us. We're live at Pete's on Johnston, celebrating the one and only Blue Gators turn for their prep power hour. You like that. I know that you probably helped to coin it. It's my pleasure to perpetuate it where I can. The one and only Blue Gators. I don't think that's ever been challenged. Nobody else has tried to file for that, right?
No, nobody else. I don't think anybody will.
Give me a little more on this football program, and in particular, this team. 3-2 in the year, 1-1 right now in district play. A couple of road games in a row at Delcom Friday. You mentioned that Homa Christian is coming up, but you got a few more chances to sparkle in front of the home fans. Franklin on the 25th,
yep,
and West St. Mary to end the regular season. The importance of these games, especially at home.
And then we're also looking forward, as the game you mentioned, the Lorville game. They're going to be better, and that's a nice place to go play. But we do have homecoming. That Franklin game is going to be homecoming, and it'll be the 10-year anniversary of the first graduating class. So we're trying to get all of those kids back. Miss Marilyn Lee, who is kind of our liaison between the Booster Club and alumni, trying to get all of the, I think we graduated 11 in our first class in 2009. So she's trying to get all of those kids back, which is going to be special. And homecoming's always a special time. We have our court ready to go. They've been doing different things with different events And then, you know, at halftime, it's a big thing to present the court and to do the and to crown the queen. So everybody, I think, is looking forward to that date. And Franklin's much improved. You know, you always want to win on homecoming, but Franklin's going to come prepared. They've got some nice-sized kids and some good athletes. So it's going to be it should be a great homecoming evening and a great game.
All right, we'll end with this. How do you keep hiring these coaches? Seriously, it's not just the assistants. We heard it earlier. Just about everywhere but men's basketball, it's unbelievable. Yeah, I'm kidding.
Exactly.
But what you're doing, I mean, even with tennis, I'm seeing that. I mean, just excellence across the board.
We try. I mean, that's the goal, to put the absolute best coaches we can find. And that's at every level, because we do have Daniel Gautreaux, our middle school AD. We're actually out at Sugar Mill Pond tonight playing 5th and 6th grade football. 5th and 6th grade is actually up 22-0 on St. Bernard. Then Coach Matt's father, Coach Bill, coaches our 5th and 6th and our 7th and 8th grade team. So the system and the philosophy and the terminology starts in the 5th grade. So we've got them rolling, and it's a great time to be a Blue Gator right now.
The one and only, and not just the Blue Gators, but every time we have this guy on the program, we have a lot of fun. I think the last time you were on, maybe two trips ago, broke some news on Eli and the move that he was making. So I'm assuming all's still good there as he continues his collegiate career.
Eli is at LSUE, and they had a jamboree this weekend. He got to start at the point, had a few points, and they're going to play again this weekend in another jamboree at LSUA. And then his season will get cranked up. So, yeah, Eli's doing fine. Appreciate you asking about it.
It's always a pleasure to have you here. Coach, thanks for doing this. Continued success.
Thank you, Ben. Go Blue Gators.
There you go. He's Eric Mouton. All right, a quick timeout, and then we'll be right back in. More Ascension Episcopal. It is time for the players. They're barking it up. They'll get their chance next. We'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
Think about this. Almost every day, you benefit from one or more of your guaranteed freedoms in the First Amendment. When you practice your religion, when you speak your mind, when you write a letter to the editor or post on social media, when you gather together peacefully with others for a cause, when you write to Congress or the government asking for change. These are five freedoms guaranteed to every American in the First Amendment. Think first. Go to thinkfirstamendment.org to learn more.
Aired in cooperation with the Louisiana Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Show we've got coming up Thursday as Bumper to Bumper Sports is back out at the Taproom River Ranch. You can listen 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, 4 until 7 p.m. Gordy Rush at 5 o'clock, giving you the sideline view on LSU football. And at 6, all things Acadiana Area High School football with Blaine Viator, plus a special guest talking Red River rivalry. And if it weren't good enough to have the show, you can also enjoy the best flatbread in town, the wings with the schwenk sauce. Maybe more importantly, 40 beers that are all on tap. It's B2BS Thursday from the Taproom River Ranch, 4 to 7. And don't forget, they'll have live music after I'm done with no cover from 8 until 11. We all start our weekend early Thursdays at the Taproom River Ranch.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go. Back with more. It's the players' turn. Ascension Episcopal in the house. It's the Blue Gators Prep Power Hour. Live for Pete's on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, and my pleasure to be joined by a couple of seniors. Right guard, defensive tackle Cole Griffith. With us, as is senior corner Eli Fournette. Guys, this is going to be fun. We're going to see how well you know your teammates here. How are you tonight?
Wonderful.
Doing well.
I love it. Confident right off the bat. Cole, we're going to start with you. We always like to do this when the kids come in. All right, so how well you know your teammates, and then we'll get you to respond to this, Eli. Who's the fastest player on this Blue Gators team?
Not Willie. Probably Asa Freeman.
You agree with that?
I say either me or Asa.
Okay, so you might be in on that. I don't know. I'm not sure if all the teammates agree. We'll keep it going. Look, we're at Pete's. People come here to have food, have a good time. Who can put back the most groceries? The biggest, most prolific eater on this Ascension team?
Either me or Clay Onselet, easily.
Probably Willie Kerstetter.
I like it so far. All right, fastest, best eater, which is not to be confused with fattest, right? We like to eat. We throw it back when we come to places like
sure.
this. Sure, why not? Strongest player on the team?
Yeah, Clay Onselet.
Clay Onselet.
All right, that was pretty unanimous.
And Ethan. Ethan Leone, too.
Sure.
All right, this is the one that usually gets, I guess, the most amount of discrepancy. Who's the smartest player? And you could take that as book smart. You could take it as football smart. Just hit me with it.
Ethan Leone.
Yeah. Yeah, Ethan's pretty good at everything.
Really?
Not really. I'm kidding.
A 3-2 start to the season. We're joined now by Cole Griffith, Eli Fournette, a couple of seniors for Coach Desimo. What types of things do you take away from the beginning of the season that you want to move forward with in district play? Eli, let's start with you.
We just got to get better in a couple, you know, like a couple little things, I guess.
Defensively, I guess, where are the biggest areas of improvement?
Stopping the run. I think we're pretty good against the pass. Stopping the run is probably our biggest thing.
We'll go to the offensive side. Cole, what does this O-line, what does this team have to do to get where you want it to be?
Improve. That's about all I got.
All right, this is the part that you guys begged me to do before we came on. Give me the coach, and then give me your impression of that coach. I'll let you guys can draw straws to pick who goes first.
You want to do a Coach McCullough impression? Try it. I think I'm going to mess it up.
I got to give a fair warning. I had Matt McCullough and Katie in last week. He said none of the kids can do an impression of me because there's no cursing on radio. So I don't know. I don't know how it goes with Scott McCullough.
Same thing.
All right, what can you do? Give me a suitable for radio take.
Drift. That's about it.
So basically Farmer Fran from the Waterboy.
A little bit.
Okay. You got anything else you want to add to that or a different coach?
That's spot on.
Okay.
That's perfect.
You can't improve upon it. All right, guys. The other thing I love to get to with every team that comes in, whether it's individual or team punishment, when you mess up and you know you're going to get it, what's the one punishment that you hate that just comes in practice or after weightlifting?
I don't get punished much. I don't make many mistakes. But running.
Running to the end zone and back after the play.
That's not fun.
That's not fun. Play. I always hear that it's boards. Do boards exist as a punishment in Youngsville as well? No.
Not yet.
I don't know what that is.
Hope I didn't plant an idea there. They say it's not fun. All right, so none of the bear crawls or anything like that creeps in?
Nope.
Man, punishments have changed. All right, just checking. Tell me about Delcom. What have you seen on tape so far? All right, we'll get your take first, Cole. What do you have to do offensively to get to a win?
Block.
It's simple, yep. But it's effective. We'll go to the defensive side. You got a wing T. How does that change what you normally would do at DB, Eli?
Just be awake for the pass and just stop the run when it comes.
We're coming down the stretch right now. Cole Griffin, Eli Fournette, our guests. We're live at Pete's on Johnston. Getting to the state quarters last year, what kind of taste did that leave in this team's mouth and kind of spur you forward toward this season?
Honestly, I'm just hungry to get back out there in the playoffs, do better this year.
Yeah, just take it week by week, but I'm definitely ready for playoffs too.
Hey, what do you remember about that? I guess at the end, Catholic New Iberia, good team. I guess what that game was like and being in that type of environment.
It's not a good feeling at all.
And this time around, maybe you get those types of games at home. Tell me about your home field advantage. How much that could help things?
We got a pretty loud student section. I think it helps. So, William Zinder, the megaphone repping. That's about.
I was about to say, you'll get that kind of love. I mean, every single home game.
Yeah, normally.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome, guys. Appreciate you coming aboard. Cole Griffith, Eli Fournette. Their teammates may not want to, but I'm going to ask them to give them a hand. I'm telling you, it's not easy.
Thanks, guys.
They just called some of you the smartest and fastest players on the team. So you can give them something occasionally. We're going to head into our final break of the program. and then a few more victims or volunteers will join us. We'll find out on the other side. One more go with the Ascension Episcopal Blue Gators. It's their Prep Power Hour live at Pete's on 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
And here we go, back in one final time. It's Ascension Episcopal's Prep Power Hour. We got the Blue Gators with us for another 15 minutes. Ben Love, and I'll be joined for a few of these moments by a couple of offensive players and guys that get it done with the football in their hands. Junior quarterback Cole Simone, as well as senior running back Mason Freeman. Guys, great to have you. Cole, for us, this is now twice in 3 years. Good
yes,
to have
sir.
You guys here.
Good to be here.
All right, let's start with this. Any major disagreements? Fastest, smartest, strongest, biggest eater? You guys had to hear something that made you say, come on now.
Honestly, I'd say biggest eater probably goes between Cole and Willie. But that's the only thing I disagree with from what they said.
Okay, so a quarterback that could throw back some groceries.
No. That Cole. Offensive line.
Lineman Cole. Okay. All right, Cole Griffin's being a little bit modest there. I understand that. Tell me this, Cole. From the first moment you were here, coming in as a freshman until now, how do things feel different?
It's not as new. Like, I'm not as nervous as when I was when I was a freshman. I have more trust in my guys because I've been playing with them for 2 years, and it's just a lot easier.
Does it feel like the coaching staff probably has more trust in you and what they allow you to do as well?
Yeah, it does. I could tell that Coach Matt has a little bit more trust in me than he did when I was a freshman.
Mason, tell me about your role in this offense. You're not the only running back, obviously. I know Ethan Leone here with us moved over tight end, but what you've been able to do this year, and shout out your O-line, of course.
No, we're definitely all interchangeable. We're all good backs. We can all make plays. But I came into this year. I wasn't able to play at the beginning because I broke my foot, so they had Ethan starting. But I came back in, and it allowed Ethan to diversify over the field, started defense, start on special teams, stuff like that. But since I've been back, my O-line's definitely been pushing weight. We've been running for a lot of yards, and it's been a good season so far.
Cole, from your perspective, did you feel like this team had a chance to be pretty special as you got ready in the summer and in August?
Oh, yeah. You could tell this team had a lot of talent on it, and everybody could play any position that they needed to whenever the coach needed to put them there.
Joined for a couple more moments by starting quarterback Cole Simone, junior for Ascension Episcopal, and senior back Mason Freeman. All right, you guys get to go with your coaching impression if you have any as well. Or if you can't say it on radio, at least tell me who the coach is. And I mean, what's their MO? What do they say?
Taj?
Yeah, you go for it.
So we have a coach, Coach Taj. Yeah.
Man, I'm Coach Taj. Man, receivers, we got to get out there and stock block. You got to stock block. Come on, hit the block.
That's not bad. And I could actually tell what you were saying. With Cole Griffith was spitting.
No, his was a spot-on impression.
But that was accurate. Mm-hmm. All right, that's fair. Right, give me a little bit on, I know the Catholic New Iberia game didn't go the way anybody in this building wanted it, but what can you take away that makes you better? I'll get Ichi to say something.
I just think when we watch film, we need to take all our mistakes and get them and work on it in the next week and be ready for the next game and work. Make sure we make them better than that game. Yeah.
I know when you go down 21-0 quick and some things happen that kind of feel like the offense didn't have any part in it, you got to dig out of a hole. How much does that change things?
Yeah, one of our coaches, Coach Heron, he always says, you got to stop the bleeding before you can build on it. And I think after the 21 points, we did a good job of stopping that bleeding, but we couldn't pull it back. And we just have to build off what happened during the game and learn and come back stronger next week.
And look, you're an offense that scored 34 in wins over Erath. Catholic Point could be 41 over Generette. So that side of the football certainly having a pretty good start to the year. What do you see against this Delcom defense as you've watched film that gives you some belief that you can get it rolling again?
They're pretty much like every defense that we played. They play cover three. We got all kinds of plays that go against cover three and all that.
How much do you look forward to being dual threat in your game, Cole?
I like being a dual threat quarterback because they never know what's coming. You can run, you can throw, it doesn't matter. Whatever you can get out, you can go.
I'll ask you this now. We'll go back to that, not necessarily fastest, strongest, but as we switch it over to Mason Freeman, your own teammate that would hit you the hardest in practice, especially when you're going ones-on-ones, who do you least want to see fill in the hole?
Probably Blake Pearson, if anybody. He blitzes strong, and it would hit you hard, definitely. Him or Ethan.
Are they allowed to hit you in practice at all?
No.
So life's pretty good there.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me about your receivers. I know it's a group that's changed, but you've been without Willie Kohlstetter, or Kerstetter, excuse me, as well as Gus Moraes. So the guys that have stepped up.
The guys that have stepped up, they're young, but they're pretty good athletes. They can do anything they need us to. But losing Willie and Gus was a big thing because they've both been playing for a few years. But the guys have stepped up, and they've been doing a good job.
What do you see from the receivers, especially the guys that have taken over for the injured players?
They've definitely stepped up to the occasion. We got Anthony Quibido and Logan Overton and a new junior, Jude Ardwin. They've all come out, and they've been catching passes, making plays, and they've just been getting better, even though it's some of their first years playing football. They've filled the spot perfectly.
I know you guys always have these media days with the TV stations and radio. What's more fun, the radio or the TV side?
I say the radio.
Yeah, I'm kind of liking the radio.
Yeah.
Okay. If y'all ever want to do this, man, I have to talk like 3 hours every single day, so it's not going to be a problem. Just let me know. I will tell you this. On radio, it just kind of happens, man. It's out there. We got a 7-second delay in case somebody drops one of those little coaches bombs that y'all were talking about earlier. But basically, it's live, and there's no filter. TV, at least, they might edit you a little bit. But you guys are doing pretty well on radio.
Yes, sir.
So explore a career in it when you're done. A lot of football left ahead, though. Cole Simone as well as Mason Freeman have been with us. Guys, best of luck coming up this Friday, the rest of the season, and good luck to the Blue Gators.
Thank you,
Ben. Appreciate it.
There you go. We've got a few more players that are putting their bid in. Again, it's an Ascension Episcopal team with an awful lot of season ahead of them. 3-2 so far, and 1-1 in District 7-2A play. And the team getting a little loud right now. Got a few more minutes left as we start to pilot this thing home. Again, this is now our fifth week, and this is definitely one of the better attendance crowds we've had. The last count that I got is we were up to 77 people. That's pretty darn impressive. And we've been doing this. Ascension Episcopal has been part of our game plan every single year. And it's kind of like Coach Mouton always tells me, the one and only Blue Gators almost always show up. Hey, at Pete's, I will just tell you that they always show up. So great to have everybody here. We're going to rock one more week. Next Tuesday, we'll have the Lafayette High Mighty Lions. Excited about that. And Clint, while we have a few more moments for our listeners that aren't here in the building, we had such good sound earlier in the program, and we've had some requests to bring it back. So I know they won't be able to hear it here in Pete's, but that sound, if you don't mind, from Jacques Doucet, WAFB-TV, we'll go off script a little bit. But LSU playing Florida, everybody getting psyched about that. And so since we've had a lot of requests, let's run that back while we have a moment. Here is what three LSU players said about this game coming up Saturday night. Joe Burrow, Caleb on Chainsaw, Braden Fajoco. This is fantastic.
I don't like them very much. I know they don't like us very much. And that's kind of been the talk around here. But you just kind of have to keep your emotions in check in a game like this.
You don't. It's not even going to sugarcoat it. It's just something that, you know what I'm saying, just goes around with the history of the programs. Obviously, two great teams that just, it just bad blood collide, very passionate programs. And it's going to be something that's going to be exposed Saturday night.
Not at all. Even if Florida's playing a Big Ten score or something, I don't care much for it. Like after last year's game, I forgot that quarterback's name, their starting quarterback or whatever, I don't know his name, but I mean, he was running around celebrating on the field like he won the Super Bowl, and so I don't know if he's playing this week. Hopefully he does, but I mean, I'm looking forward to getting after him.
Clint, I'll get your 2 cents on that. It's still as good as the first time we heard it.
It really has been, and it's amazing just to know there's just flat-out hatred for the University of Florida after everything that happened last year. And it makes you wonder how much more juice there's going to be closer to Thanksgiving when you have that LSU A&M game, because you can about imagine these guys are going to be up for that one.
And so we've got a huge week that'll turn into a big weekend. Don't forget, tomorrow night,
almost exactly 24 hours from right now. The Raging Cajuns welcome in App State. And this place has been on fire about it. The people have come in here since I arrived at about 3:15. It's on everybody's mind. We had Jake DeLome on the program earlier, and Jake is all in on that game. Of course, he just went into the Carolina Panthers Hall of Honor that happened over the weekend. Jake DeLome, Steve Smith, some pretty talented guys. And he started off, like just about everybody here, playing prep football, the former Turnley's Catholic Rebel. So Jake the Snake, yours truly, the famous Clint D, we're all going to be piling into Cajun Field. See if you can't come out there and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. UL taking on App State. And how about a little connecting point? App State comes in as about the number 28 team in the country when you look at also receiving votes. Tulane. And we mentioned a former Blue Gator, Michael Remende, the number 29 team in the country. So a lot of interesting things that can happen. Tulane keeps winning. They'll be in the top 25. Cajuns beat App State. Who knows? I think they've got every chance to be awfully close. And so former Ascension Episcopal head coach Mike Desimo and the Raging Cajuns, a big opportunity on a national stage tomorrow night. Again, that's Wednesday when it all starts. These Blue Gators, they're going to be on the road taking on Delcom. And then we roll into Saturday night when LSU plays host to Florida, a night game in Tiger Stadium. It's going to be an awful lot of fun. So I want to thank everybody who joined us. Huge crowd here for Ascension Episcopal. We had started with Matt Desimo. We had Eric Mouton and then a slew of upperclassmen. Shout-out to Cole Griffith, Eli Fournette, Cole Simone, and Mason Freeman. We've had a lot of fun, as we always do, with our prep power hours. Thanks again to Ascension Episcopal. The Blue Gators showed up in full force. We'll be back at it tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.